Okay, so we are in Genesis chapter 32 this morning, and we saw what happened in chapter 31 last time, where Jacob had been serving Laban for 20 years. He served 7 years for his wife, Rachel, and then ended up with her sister, Leah, instead, and that was kind of a mess. But then he also gets Rachel, and he ends up serving 14 years for his two wives, and then somehow ends up with four wives. And then he serves another 6 years. He serves Laban another 6 years for his cattle, and Laban spent that time just cheating him again and again and deceiving him and changing his wages and treating him very unfairly. And God was with him. God was with him and saw to it that Laban was not able to hurt him.
Amen.
And although Laban tried to take everything that Jacob had, actually God took what Laban had and gave it to Jacob. So he left there in a very prosperous, wealthy condition. And God appeared to him and said, now's the time to leave. Mm-hmm. So leave, go back to your kindred, back to your, back to the land of thy fathers. And he said, I will be with thee. And so Jacob left Laban. He fled from him. He stole away unawares. And it wasn't for a few days that that Laban found out about it. And what he did, he came after Jacob, and this is what we looked at last time. He caught up to Jacob in Mount Gilead, and God appeared to him. He said, don't speak to Jacob, good or bad. So what are you supposed to say? Well, I think God was telling him, don't say anything to him. Okay, I don't want you to speak good to him and try and, you know, smooth things over and come on back home and, you know, everything will be fine. No, he didn't want him to go back there. He also said, don't speak bad to him. I basically just leave him alone. And Laban didn't really do that. He came after him and he started accusing him of all this wrongdoing. But anyway, I don't want to get into too much detail about that. We did talk about it last time, and there is a recording of that. But anyway, they ended up making a covenant there at Gilead, and they basically parted ways in peace. And at the end of that chapter, Laban departed and returned unto his place. And that's where we pick up in chapter 32. And it says, and Jacob went on his way, and the angels of God met him.
Hey.
And when Jacob saw them, he said, this is God's host. And he called the name of that place Mahanaim. And Jacob sent messengers before him to Esau, his brother, unto the land of Seir, the country of Edom. And he commanded them, saying, thus shall ye speak unto my lord Esau. Thy servant Jacob saith thus, I have sojourned with Laban and stayed there until now. Then I have oxen and asses, flocks and men servants and women servants. And I have sent to tell my lord that I may find grace in thy sight. And the messengers returned to Jacob, saying, we came to thy brother Esau, and also he cometh to meet thee, and 400 men with him. Then Jacob was greatly afraid and distressed, and he divided the people that was with him, and the flocks and herds and the camels, into two bands, and said, if Esau come to the one company and smite it, then the other company which is left shall escape. And Jacob said, O God of my father Abraham, and God of my father Isaac, the Lord which saidst unto me, return unto thy country and to thy kindred, and I will deal well with thee. I am not worthy of the least of all the mercies and of all the truth which thou hast showed unto thy servant. For with my staff I passed over this Jordan, and now I am become two bands. Deliver me, I pray thee, from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau, for I fear him, lest he will come and smite me and the mother with the children. And thou saidst, I will surely do thee good, and make thy seed as the sand of the sea, which cannot be numbered for multitude. And he lodged there that same night, and took of that which came to his hand a present for Esau his brother, 200 she-goats and 20 he-goats, 200 ewes and 20 rams, 30 milk camels with their colts, 40 kine and 10 bulls, 20 she-asses and 10 foals. And he delivered them into the hand of his servants, every drove by themselves, and said unto his servants, Pass over before me, and put a space betwixt drove and drove. And he commanded the foremost, saying, When Esau, my brother, meeteth thee, and asketh thee, saying, Whose art thou, and whither goest thou, and whose are these before thee? Then thou shalt say, They be thy servant Jacob's. It is a present sent unto my lord Esau, and behold, also he is behind us. And so commanded he the second, and the third, and all that followed the drove, saying, On this manner shall ye speak unto Esau, when ye find him. And say ye, Moreover, behold, thy servant Jacob is behind us. For he said, I will appease him with the present that goeth before me, and afterward I will see his face. Peradventure he will accept of me. So went the present over before him, and himself lodged that night in the company. And he rose up that night, and took his two wives, and his two women servants, and his 11 sons, and passed over the ford Jabbok. And he took them, and sent them over the brook, and sent over that he had. And Jacob was left alone. I'm going to stop there. And we're going to leave the rest of this chapter for next week and just focus on the first part. So we'll go through it bit by bit here. So starting in verse 1, it says, And Jacob went on his way. So we already talked about Laban caught up with him in Mount Gilead, and they make a covenant there. And it says... back in the last chapter, Laban called it Jigar Sehadutha, but Jacob called it Galeed. Galeed is the name that Jacob called that place there, that pillar. It means the heap of witness. That was the heap of stones that they made. And Laban gave it his own name in Chaldean. But that area and that mountain came to be known as Gilead, which is similar to Galeed. So I think the mountain was named after that name that Jacob gave it. But in any case, that's where they were. Then Laban left there, went to his own place, back to Padan Aram. And now it says Jacob went on his way. That means he left the place where it was, where he was. So he's not there anymore. And then the second thing it says in verse 1, it says, And the angels of God met him. Verse 2, And when Jacob saw them, he said, This is God's host. And he called the name of that place Mahanaim. And Jacob sent messengers before... Wait a minute. The angels of God met him. And yet it just kind of glosses over it like nothing happened. And talks about, okay, well, Jacob did this and Jacob did that and yada, yada, yada. And then we don't read anything about all these angels. Okay, I don't think when it mentions this in verse 1, I'm not convinced that that's an event that happens in verse 1 before all this stuff happens. I think it's kind of an overview about what happens at this place, which is described throughout the rest of this chapter, okay? We see that a lot in Genesis where sometimes, like, there's kind of an overview Hey, we see that in Genesis chapter 1 as kind of an overview of that week. And then in chapter 2, he kind of goes back and gives you some more details. And I think that's kind of what's going on here. I'm not sure of it. It's kind of tricky to piece this together, but we'll talk about this. Okay, so in any case, it says the angels of God met him. What does that mean? Does that mean there were a bunch of angels that came up to him and shook his hand and said, "How do you do, Jacob? I'm Michael. I'm Gabriel. I don't think that's what it's saying. But when Jake and I don't want to read anything into that. I don't want to just make stuff up and just put it in here and say, "Oh, it was like this." Let's look at what it says. Okay, the angels of God met him, and when Jacob saw them, he said, "This is God's host." And he called the name of that place Mahanaim. Okay, so that name, Mahanaim, it basically means two hosts or two camps. And what it seems to be is Jacob is camped there, and then he sees this camp of angels, and he says, "There's two hosts here. There's two camps here. There's mine and there's God's. And we're actually all camped together here in the same place." And so I think what happens is he went on his way and he came to this place and he sets up camp here. And I think it's at that point or after that, that he notices that there's angels there. And he sees them as a camp and he says, "This is God's host. There's all these angels here. I mean, it must be God's host. This is God's camp. This is God's army. He's got all these angels here." We know from several other places in the Bible that God is the Lord of hosts. He's got armies. He's got thousands upon thousands of angels. Jesus said, "I could call out my Father and he'll send me 12 legions of angels." That's thousands and thousands of angels. Okay? He's the Lord of hosts. And Jacob sees these angels and that's what he says. "This is God's host and he's camped here with me." But as I said, I think this is something that I don't think it's an event that happens before all this stuff. I think it kind of happens it happens sometime in this chapter. And I'm not really sure exactly how it happens, but we'll continue on for now and probably talk about this a little bit later on. So verse 3, again, Jacob went on his way. Well, what was his way? Well, God said, "Return to your kindred, return to the land of your fathers, and I will be with thee." And so that's the way that Jacob's going. He's returning home again. There's just one thing. Well, his brother Esau, he originally fled from the face of Esau because Esau wanted to kill him. And his parents kind of, you know, also provided this reason. "Well, we want you to go over to Laban and take a wife over there." And that's true. But also they were trying to get him out of there for a while so his brother didn't kill him because they knew that he wanted to. So before Jacob heads back, it says he sent messengers before him to Esau, his brother, unto the land of Seir, the country of Edom. So here's a question. Why is Esau in Seir? What is Seir? Well, Seir comes to be the place where the nation of Esau dwells. Esau, also called Edom, as we read earlier in Genesis. The first time Seir is mentioned is back in Genesis 14, so we could turn there for a second. Genesis 14 was the it gives the account of what's really the First World War. There's four kings fighting against five, and this place is mentioned there. And it also says who the inhabitants were. So Genesis 14, in verse 5, it says, "And in the 14th year came Chedorlaomer and the kings that were with him, and smote the Rephaims and Ashtaroth-Karnaim, and the Zuzims and Ham, and the Emims and Shavi-Kiriathaim, and the Horites in their Mount Seir, unto El-Paran, which is by the wilderness." So from old time, from the time of these kings, which is, this is the time of Abraham, there were people living in Mount Seir, or in the land of Seir, that were called Horites. Now we see that when Jacob sends the messengers to his brother Esau, he sends them to the land of Seir, and it says, the country of Edom. Well, wait a minute. What happened to the Horites? I'll come back to this in a second. Look at the next verse. So he commanded them, saying, "Thus shall you speak unto my lord Esau, thy servant Jacob saith thus, I have sojourned with Laban and stayed there until now, and have oxen and asses, flocks and men servants and women servants, and I have sent to tell my lord that I may find grace in his sight." I want to send a message to my brother Esau. I want to tell him what's been going on with me, where I've been all this time, what I've been doing. I want to tell him about all the stuff that I have now. And hopefully I can find grace in his sight. What's the response? Verse 6. The messengers returned to Jacob, saying, "We came to thy brother Esau, and also he cometh to meet thee, and 400 men with him." This is not a welcoming committee. They're not going to have a party. He's got 400 men with him. What is that? It's an army. It's a host. Esau is basically a warlord. Okay? And this was hinted at before in the blessing that Isaac gave to Esau. Go back to chapter 27. Chapter 27. Now, there was a blessing that was supposed to go to the firstborn, that would have been Esau, but because Esau was profane and carnal, and he sold his birthright, that is the right to the blessing, which he had by birth, by selling the birthright, he also forfeited the blessing, and that blessing ended up going to Jacob. And so the blessing of the firstborn, which should have been to the firstborn, went to Jacob, and Esau kind of gets this blessing as a consolation prize. Genesis 27, verse 39. And Isaac his father answered and said unto him, "Behold, thy dwelling shall be the fatness of the earth and of the dew of heaven from above, and by thy sword shalt thou live, and shall serve thy brother. And it shall come to pass, when thou shalt have the dominion, that thou shalt break his yoke from off thy neck." But what does he say? By thy sword shalt thou live.
Yep.
Esau, like I just said, he ends up becoming like a warlord. He's got an army with him. Why does he have 400 men with him? Because he's coming to kill Jacob? No. Esau didn't raise up an army of 400 men to make war on his brother, who's a shepherd and he's got four wives and a bunch of little kids. That was not his purpose. Jacob sees these people coming, though, and he's like, "Oh no, they're coming to get us." But I don't think that's why Esau has these 400 men. Go to Deuteronomy chapter 2. Deuteronomy And I will show you what I think happened. Deuteronomy chapter 2. And again, this is Moses speaking toward the end of his life here. And just starting in verse 1, he says, "Then we turned and took our journey into the wilderness by the way of the Red Sea, as the Lord spake unto me, and we compassed Mount Seir many days. And the Lord spake unto me, saying, Ye have compassed this mountain long enough, turn you northward. And command thou the people, saying, Ye are to pass through the coast of your brethren, the children of Esau, which dwell in Seir, and they shall be afraid of you. Take ye good heed unto yourselves, therefore. Meddle not with them, for I will not give you of their land. No, not so much as a foot breadth, because I have given Mount Seir unto Esau for a possession." Interesting. Why was Esau in that land? Because God gave it to him. He calls it the country of Edom. Edom is Esau. It's Esau's country now. Okay? Well, what happened to the previous inhabitants, the Horites? Okay. Go down to verse 9. He says, "And the Lord said unto me, Distress not the Moabites, neither contend with them in battle. For I will not give thee of their land for a possession, because I have given Ar unto the children of Lot for a possession." Okay, so God gave this land to this group. He gave this land to this nation, you know. All right. Verse 10. "The Emims dwelt therein in times past, a people great and many and tall as the Anakims, which also were accounted giants as the Anakims. But the Moabites called them Emims." Okay, so you got these people in Ar, which was eventually given to the Moabites. And he says the Emims dwelt there in time past. And what does he say about them? They were giants. The Emims were giants living in this land. And he also mentions another group. Well, these guys are great and tall and many. They're like the Anakims. Well, there's another group of giants living somewhere else. Then you get to verse 12. "The Horims also dwelt in Seir before time, but the children of Esau succeeded them when they had destroyed them from before them and dwelt in their stead, as Israel did unto the land of his possession, which the Lord gave unto them." So I'm not going to, there's other verses that I can go to about this, and you can look at the rest of this chapter as well. But I think what happened is that by this time, there's a group of giants in that land, in Seir. And I think Esau built up this army to go and conquer that land. And it has been conquered then and become his land since Genesis 14, when it belonged to the Horites, or at least when they were inhabiting that land. So Jacob finds out that Esau's in Seir and send messengers there. And Esau's at the head of this army. So what does he do? He brings the army with him. Why? I think because they were following him. And I also think Esau has a purpose for bringing this army with him. And not to really get ahead of the story here, but I don't think it's for the purpose that Jacob thinks it's for. But anyway, to continue on, Jacob hears about these 400 men coming with Esau. And it says in verse 7, "Then Jacob was greatly afraid and distressed. And he divided the people that was with him and the flocks and herds and the camels into two bands." Why does he do that? Verse 8. "And said, If Esau come to the one company and smite it, then the other company which is left shall escape." So in Jacob's mind, Esau's got these 400 men because he's coming to attack us. He's going to do us hurt. And this is his thinking. Well, it's kind of a desperate plan, but if I split up into two groups, maybe put Rachel in one group and Leah in another group, then at least if Esau attacks one group, half of us will be able to escape. That's the plan. That's literally what he's saying. Yep. It's a desperate plan. But he's terrified. It says he was greatly afraid and distressed. So he comes up with this desperate plan. But then verse 9. And Jacob said, O God of my father Abraham, and God of my father Isaac, the Lord which saidst unto me, return unto thy country and to thy kindred, and I will deal well with thee. I am not worthy of the least of all thy mercies, and of all the truth which thou hast showed unto thy servant. For with my staff I passed over this Jordan, and now I am become two bands. Deliver me, I pray thee, from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau, for I fear him, lest he will come and smite me and the mother with the children. And thou saidst, I will surely do thee good, and make thy seed as the sand of the sea, which cannot be numbered for multitude. So he prays to God, and this is a great prayer. It reminds me of some of the prayers that I've made to the Lord before. So the first thing he does is he acknowledges God's identity. O God of my father Abraham and God of my father Isaac. You're not a God of my imagination. You're not a God that I just made up. You're not some fairy tale. You're the God of Abraham and Isaac. These are real people. And you're a God that spoke to me and said unto me, return unto thy country and to thy kindred. And you made a promise to me. You said, if I return, you'll deal well with me. I've been counting on that. And I'm on my way. I'm going there. I'm trying to follow this. But now my brother's coming with 400 men. Verse 10, he acknowledges God's grace toward him despite his own unworthiness. He says, I am not worthy of the least of all the mercies and of all the truth which thou hast showed unto thy servant. God showed him mercies and truth. And you know what that is? That's his grace. That's his grace. Well, Jacob said, I'm not worthy of the least of it. That's right. And that's something about grace, is that it's not about whether you're worthy or not. Okay? Go to 1 Peter chapter 5. I know this verse doesn't use the word grace, the verse that we just read, but the Bible doesn't always use the word grace when it talks about grace. You'll find many places in the Bible that, what is it describing? Well, it's describing the grace of God. Even though the word grace isn't necessarily used, I want you to be able to recognize that. 1 Peter chapter 5, and we're going to start reading in verse 5. He says, likewise, ye younger, submit yourselves unto the elder. What a coincidence. Jacob is about to do that. Yea, all of you, be subject one to another and be clothed with humility. For God resisteth the proud and giveth grace to the humble. Humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you in due time, casting all your care upon him, for he careth for you. These three verses are all about what Jacob is going through right at this moment in chapter 32. But I want to say this about grace, because I know some people are really confused about grace, what it is. What does it take to get grace? Do you have to deserve it? Here's the thing. Jacob says, I am unworthy of the least of it. And that's the thing about grace. You're not worthy of it. At the same time, grace is not something that's unconditional. It has conditions. Okay? Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. Why? Because he was righteous by faith. There was a condition. He believed God. What's the condition that we see here? God resisteth the proud, but giveth grace to the humble. Okay? If you're humble before God, he will give you grace, like he did with Jacob. If Jacob wasn't humble, he wouldn't have got the grace. But notice what Jacob said. I'm not worthy of it. You have to be humble to get it. Being humble doesn't make you worthy of it. But that's what God requires. And if he sees that you're humble before him, he'll give you that grace. And he'll give you things that you're not worthy of, that you didn't do anything to deserve. So it's conditional, but it's not deserved. I accidentally alighted on this passage as I was flipping through to look for 1 Peter 5. And I accidentally flipped to this page on my way there. It's Matthew 18. And as I was just flipping the page and getting ready to flip over another page, my eyes landed right on this verse. It's Matthew 18, verse 3. And Jesus said, verily I say unto you, except ye be converted and become as little children, ye shall not enter into the kingdom of heaven. Whosoever therefore shall humble himself as this little child, the same is the greatest. The same is greatest in the kingdom of heaven. Well, what do we see here in Genesis 32? We see Jacob humbling himself before God as a little child. I'm not worthy of the least of all the mercies and of all the truth. Think about a child. You know, there's a lot of children in this church. Dad, do your children find grace in your sight? Are you gracious to them? Do they deserve it all? No. There's still a condition for it. But it's not like they didn't do anything to deserve it. A baby's born, they deserve all the grace that you show to them? No, they didn't do anything to deserve it. And that's what Jacob's saying here. I'm not worthy of the least of it. You've shown me mercies and truth already up until this point in my life, and I didn't deserve it. What's another word for verse 10? Again, he doesn't use the word thanks. He doesn't say, thank you, God. But thanks is more than a word. And what he's doing here is he's giving thanks. Thanks is acknowledging, you gave me something that I didn't deserve. Thank you. You've showed me all this mercy and truth. For with my staff, I passed over this Jordan. When I came this way, I was by myself. I had a stick in my hand. With my staff I passed over. Now I am become two bands. I've got two whole bands of people and cattle and all this stuff. And he's saying, all this stuff I have is because you blessed me. You were gracious to me and gave me a bunch of stuff that I didn't deserve. Amen. That's the truth. But then he says, deliver me, I pray thee, from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau. We saw in the last chapter, Jacob was afraid of Laban. That's what he said. When Laban caught up to him, I was afraid. I thought you were going to take all this away from me. I thought you were going to try and cheat me again. And I was afraid, and that's why I fled. Well, here he comes to God and he says, deliver me from the hand of Esau, for I fear him, lest he will come and smite me and the mother with the children. Jacob had the fear of man, specifically his brother, but here's what he did with that. He took it to God, and he admitted it. You know, sometimes we have things in our heart that we don't want. It could be sin. It could be just iniquity. It could be fear of man. Well, we should do like Jacob did. We should take that to God and admit it. Not try and hide it. Not try and cover it up. Right. But go to God and say, I have this fear. I don't want it. I don't want to have to go to him fearing him and being terrified. He didn't want that. But he acknowledges it. He's honest about it. So I fear him. I fear that he's going to do this. He's going to smite me and he's going to smite the mothers and the kids. And then finally, verse 12, and thou saidst, I will surely do thee good and make thy seed as the sands of the sea, which cannot be numbered for multitude. He finishes with another promise that he got from God. And this time, it's not just return to your land, I'll deal well with thee. It's about, no, God, this is your purpose. This is your long-term plan. And he's remembering that. He's remembering God has a long-term plan and purpose for my life. And that it's not just going to end with me, but it's also about my seed. That he's going to multiply it. And so that's his prayer. And verse 13, it says, he lodged there that same night and took of that which came to his hand a present for Esau, his brother. So first thing, it says he lodged there that same night. And it's going to say the same thing in verse 21, himself lodged that night in the company. So in that same place where he was, where he had set up this camp, he lodged there. And then he prepares this present for Esau, his brother, 200 she-goats, 20 goats, 200 ewes, 20 rams, 30 milk camels with their colts, 40 kine, 10 bulls, 20 she-asses, 10 foals. He delivered them into the hand of his servants, every drove by themselves, and said unto his servants, pass over before me and put a space betwixt drove and drove. So he's got like this present he's sending with these servants, and they're going to go. He's basically sending this present as a series of, I don't know, stages or layers. Like first he gets hit with this one, and then maybe that one's not good enough. Oh, here comes another one. Like I was wrapping gifts for Christmas this year, or last year, and I thought about just, you know, if I got like three things for one person, I thought about just wrapping them all in one. But then I was like, nah, it's better if you get to open this one. And then this one, and then this one. So I don't know, maybe that's what Jacob had in mind. But anyway, so that's his plan. He sends all these gifts on ahead with these different groups of his servants. And then you can see in verse 20, he gives the reason. And say ye moreover, behold, thy servant Jacob is behind us. For he said, I will appease him with a present that goeth before me. And afterward, I will see his face. Peradventure, he will accept of me. So went the present over before him, and himself lodged that night in the company. So it mentions in the next verse that the rest of his family and his two wives, his two women servants, he refers to he doesn't just say four wives. He makes a distinction there, and we've made this before. Basically, he's got these two wives, then he's got these other two women that originally were their servants, that it calls them concubines, but they're kind of like lesser wives. And you see, it still makes a distinction between them here. And his 11 sons, he's got 11 at this point. He's got at least one daughter too. But anyway, they all pass over the ford Jabbok. What a ford is, if you don't know, it's a place where, in a body of water where it's shallow enough for you to cross by walking through the water, okay? So if there's no bridge there, you don't want to go through the deepest part. You want to go through a part where it's shallow and you can actually walk without like getting swept away by the current. So that's where. So it says the present went over before him, himself lodged that night in the company. So he's still back at the camp. Verse 22, he rose up that night, took his two wives, his two women servants, his 11 sons, and passed over the ford Jabbok. So it's like he took them, he went over the ford with them. Verse 23, and he took them and sent them over the brook and sent over that he had. It says he sent it. It doesn't say he brought it. He kind of like, he was moving everything over and had everything and everyone else pass over this brook. But then the last thing we read, verse 24, and Jacob was left alone. Well, how could he be alone if he went with them? He didn't go with them yet. He sent everyone else over the brook, but he stayed back in the camp in this place that he named Mahanaim. Why? Well, I think it's like this. I think he wanted to be alone there in this place that he knew was God's host, and he wanted to spend some time alone with God. And that's going to help us to understand the rest of this chapter when we get to it next time. One last thing that I want to read is in Psalm 34. I think it goes really well with this chapter that we just read. So turn to Psalm 34. It's 22 verses. It'll just take us a couple of minutes to read through it. But I want you to think about verse 7 in particular when we get to it. Psalm 34. I will bless the Lord at all times. His praise shall continually be in my mouth. My soul shall make her boast in the Lord. The humble shall hear thereof and be glad. Oh, magnify the Lord with me, and let us exalt his name together. I sought the Lord, and he heard me, and delivered me from all my fears. They looked unto him and were lightened, and their faces were not ashamed. This poor man cried, and the Lord heard him, and saved him out of all his troubles. The angel of the Lord encampeth round about them that fear him and delivereth them. O taste and see that the Lord is good. Blessed is the man that trusteth in him. O fear the Lord, ye his saints, for there is no want to them that fear him. The young lions do lack and suffer hunger, but they that seek the Lord shall not want any good thing. Come, ye children, hearken unto me. I will teach you the fear of the Lord. What man is he that desireth life and loveth many days, that he may see good? Keep thy tongue from evil and thy lips from speaking guile. Think about that in the context of Jacob's life right now, everything that he's been through. Depart from evil and do good. Seek peace and pursue it. The eyes of the Lord are upon the righteous, and his ears are open unto their cry. The face of the Lord is against them that do evil, to cut off the remembrance of them from the earth. The righteous cry, and the Lord heareth and delivereth them out of all their troubles. The Lord is nigh unto them that are of a broken heart, and saveth such as be of a contrite spirit. Many are the afflictions of the righteous, but the Lord delivereth him out of them all. He keepeth all his bones, not one of them is broken. Evil shall slay the wicked, and they that hate the righteous shall be desolate. The Lord redeemeth the soul of his servants, and none of them that trust in him shall be desolate. And we'll just end with that and pick it up again next time. And thanks for being in Sunday school.